And the motion picture is the most important art film ever devised by the human race. It is the art form that creates more empathy than any other. It creates our ability to step out of our own shoes.
Who's hosting this one?
Me.
Okay.
All right. You guys have both seen this more than once?
I've seen it twice.
Okay. All right. I saw it yesterday, but then I watched like three movies after I saw it yesterday, so my brain's a little scrambled.
Yeah, you watched a lot of movies this weekend too.
I watched six movies. Yeah, because I'm not. I mean, I feel fine and I'm not sick at all, as far as I know. I just am also not leaving my house. So
yeah, I suppose that's true.
Yeah, and don't really have anything else to do. It's like I cleaned and then I just like, well, I'm gonna watch a whole bunch of movies. So yeah, it's been a good weekend for that. I want to try to watch a couple more tonight. Maybe we'll see. Might be a little.
Memoria?
Ambitious of me. No, watch
Memoria. Rewatch Memoria.
No, thank you. I watched Memoria
last finally
night.
If
you watch it one more time, you'll understand it.
Oh, you think
sense.
So? Yeah, yeah, no, because I messaged Nick about it after I watched it. And I was like, okay, now can you explain to me what I just watched? And
I'm like, no.
He was not able to do so.
I cannot. I have some guesses. I have explanations as to what I think certain things mean or how they feel like they mean to me. And beyond that, like, I don't think he offers like logical.
I had read that this was allegedly one of his more accessible movies. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, from the two I've seen, they're the most inaccessible movies I've ever seen. So,
yeah, his movies are very tough.
Not to spoil future chats, but his movies may not just be for me. If this was one of his more accessible movies, I just may not be going down that road. I might just have to say more for everybody else. Cause
I would say watch Tropical Malady because it's basically about just falling in love.
Okay.
And so even if like you can't really understand what's going on, it's like, hey, these two people fell in love. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Part of what makes this one more accessible is that it's not as, or if it is, it's like more obliquely tied to like Thai folklore, whereas the other ones like the other ones totally are, which makes it like not only is it like not traditionally structured and like, you know, just kind of weird, but it's also rooted in things that you don't have any basis for.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, people, I don't know. I feel like so many people have seen Uncle Boonmi that I was like, I don't know, that movie probably makes sense. But
well,
now
it's
I'm
a movie that like
not.
You can sort of like dare someone to watch because like, oh, someone has sex with a fish. Oh, there's a weird
spoiler.
That's okay. Probably not going to watch it, but
It's one of those movies I feel like you could dare someone to watch because, like, look how weird it is that it actually being something accessible.
Yeah. Because
it's incoherent.
It's so funny because when, Dylan, when you asked Nick if he had watched Memoria with Nelly and you were like, no, she doesn't like slow cinema. And I was like, well, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know, Tilda Swinton and the story about a lady. How slow can it be? Oh, my God.
The way I put it to Nelly was that
I'm getting tired thinking about it.
Tilda Swinton is the least weird part about the movie, which is not something. Usually, she's the most weird part of.
That is what is kind of strange about it. She's kind of just this person walking through this world that you're like everything's a little bit off.
Yeah, she's the straight character in this movie.
And
has that ever happened before? Can you think of another Tilda movie where she's the straight one? I will say
she's not as crazy.
In
The Souvenir, part one.
I was going to say
she's a little weirder in part two.
Oh, really?
I mean, a little bit. Just seems a little more eccentric. But I mean, what she's not weird in Michael Clayton.
Yeah, I was going to say Tom Wilkinson's the crazy one in Michael Clayton.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I am Shiva, the god of death, baby.
Sorry, quick Tilda chat here. Now you've really sparked my interest, and I'm trying to see what maybe is her like most normal role.
I mean, I think she's very normal in Souvenir, but everyone's kind of normal in it.
Yes.
So I don't know how much.
Where
that
is she in Avengers Endgame? What?
She's one of the.
She has a pretty important part in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, she's Doctor Strange's. She's like that.
She talks to Mark Ruffalo on the roof. She pulls him out of the. Like I said, I've seen that movie
that's
like
right,
five
she
times.
Does show up
I can
that.
Tell you what her part is.
Where is she in Uncut Gems?
She's the phone call.
Oh. Right.
When Howie tries to get the auction like withdrawn or price changed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
She's not the craziest one in Burn After Reading for some reason.
When you look at her, so I think Dylan and I are both looking at her Letterboxd page, which is sorted by most popular. So it's very funny that Uncut Gems is the third movie on page. Like, okay.
She is possibly the straight man in Burn After Reading because that movie's just filled with idiots.
Yes.
Yeah, she's pretty, yeah. I mean, we need to talk about Kevin, a movie I have not and probably will never watch. No,
we don't need to talk about that movie.
That's something that seems like a role.
As I've never heard of watch that, but I think she's just a, you know, she's a messed up person, but she's just a person in that.
Yeah.
Michael Clayton is so low on this. I mean, she's okay. I think she's normal in A Bigger Splash.
Oh, yeah. I guess in both, like, that and I Am Love, she's pretty normal. And I mean,
A Bigger Splash is so good. What a movie.
Yeah,
I was thinking about it a lot last night watching Lost Daughter.
Lost Daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, just because Dakota Johnson by the seaside, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a lot of good movies Tilda Swinton's been in.
Like Memoria.
Yeah, she's a good actress.
Like Memoria. Sorry, Tilda talk here.
She's got like, I was actually, I looked at her Letterboxd page a few days ago too, because I was thinking, she has like such a good array of director she's worked with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
She's worked with like Worris Ethicoon and Bong Joon-ho and Luca Guadagnino and
Coen Brothers,
yeah. Wes Anderson.
Yeah, like she's Jim Jarmusch, like
David Fincher.
Cameron Crowe.
What Cameron Crowe did she?
She is a part of Vanilla Sky.
Is she?
She's one of the people in Vanilla. She's in Vanilla Sky. Spoiler alert for Vanilla Sky. She's like.
No one's gonna understand Vanilla Sky.
She's like selling the technology of the future when she was like.
Oh.
She's the woman who like basically is like selling the, you know, you can freeze yourself in a dream state.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in almost 20 years, but that is her part in that.
Spike Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah,
with the adaptation.
Mm-hmm. I gotta watch that someday.
That's a good movie.
Danny Boyle, The Beach.
Oh, she's in The Beach.
Yeah, okay. She's like second lead in The Beach.
Really?
Yeah, I think she's like the love interest
for Leonardo DiCaprio. That's the first thing that made me want to watch The Beach. They're actually probably not that far apart in age now. Although she's 60.
She's second billed on Wikipedia.
Damn. Okay. Oh, okay.
She's second lead in that, like, for sure.
So, does anyone know when Souvenir Part 2 is going to be
available?
What is why is that movie just, like... I mean, I saw it in theaters, like, 6 months ago. Like, why is it just, like, hanging out? Because I was like, I would really love to rewatch that. Doesn't seem possible. Who put that out?
Is it A24 again?
Yeah, and I believe the first one was an Amazon streaming, like a
co-release. Right. What?
Yeah, it's A24.
Interesting. Well, that's messed up. People should be able to watch that movie.
Hello and welcome.
Oh, sorry. I can't just like talk about Tilda Swinton for the next
Tilda Swinton pod.
Tilda cast. Someone has to have one of those, right? There's like a podcast for every actor out there breaking down their career. Someone has to have a Tilda cast already. That would be very cool.
You do the lead-in. I'll try to figure out what it would be called. Our Tilda Swinton spinoff.
All right. I gotta refocus. I told you I'm not focused today. Whew.
That's okay. This is all gonna be left in. We're gonna be 7 minutes into an episode. We're gonna
great. Well, now it seems silly to do the intro, but. Hello, and welcome to The Great Movies Pod, a retrospective film review show, the podcast where we watch and discuss each of the films covered in Roger Ebert's seminal film essay collection, The Great Movies. I'm Jana Gardner.
I'm Nick Fulton.
And I'm Dylan Clare.
All right, if we did a Tilda Swinton podcast, it would be called We Need to Talk About Tilda.
Okay, damn it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's the only thing you can call it.
That's coming in context-free, and people are going to have no idea what the fuck we're talking about.
This week, we are here to talk about the films of Tilda Swinton. No, this week, believe it or not, we are discussing The Lady Eve, a 1941 American screwball comedy film written and directed by Preston Sturges and starring Barbara Stanwyck and Henry Fonda. Yeah, that's our movie for this week. So digressions, we're really coming in from a wild digression to get my brain back on Lady Eve. So like I said, 1941, Preston Sturges. Not only was this my first time seeing this movie, this is my first time seeing any Preston Sturges movie. Hmm. So
I think I've only seen two.
I've only seen two, and this is my first as well.
Oh, really? I feel like, yeah. I don't know. That may, I guess that's not that crazy then. I felt like I was very off for not having seen Sullivan's
Travels.
I think
we're all very
Beach
crazy
Story.
For not seeing more than just, I'm assuming Sullivan's Travels is your other one, Nick.
Yeah.
I feel that like was Palm Beach Story is so, like, that to me feels like a major blind spot.
I can't believe none of us have seen Palm Beach Story.
Yeah, these two in Palm Beach Story, I think, are, like, much higher tiered than the rest of his work, at least in terms of zeitgeist.
Yeah. So this is our second Barbara Stanwyck movie after Double Indemnity. And our first Henry Fonda movie, I believe. Although I think we'll have some more coming up.
Yeah, we see
soon,
him down
very soon.
Very soon?
My Darling Clementine.
Yeah, in the M's. Oh. It's not that soon, though. There's a lot of L's, and that's at the end of the M's.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a few months away.
It's only a letter away, but man.
I learned last night that My Darling Clementine is about the Earp brothers. He plays Wyatt Earp in that movie.
It has nothing to do with the small orange-like fruit.
But I just thought it was like a generic Western. I had no, like, when I was looking around at Henry Fonda and what was going on with his career around this time. And it was like, My Darling Clementine, Wyatt Earp. I had no idea that that's what that movie was about. So,
yeah.
Even more excited about looking forward to it now. All right. Well, in this movie, Henry Fonda does not play Wyatt Earp. He plays Charles Pontefract Pike, whose nickname is Hopsy.
Hopsy?
which is a great nickname. He is an heir to a beer brewery fortune.
No! Ale.
It's ale.
Sorry. Ale. I was gonna try to make the ale versus the lager versus the, what's the slogan they say?
Pike's my father
ale,
burst,
Yale.
My father would burst a blood vessel if he heard you say that.
Yeah.
What is the something about like Pike's ale?
Something
the men of
Yale.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
I made a note to write it down and then I did not. But anyway,
you made a note to make a note.
I did. I was like, go back to this, and then I didn't. It's been a crazy weekend.
Oh,
that, so.
It's the ale that won for Yale.
There it is. The ale that won for Yale. Thank you. But Barbara Stanwyck, con woman, Henry Fonda, rich guy, hijinks ensue. But yeah, like I said, this was my first time seeing this movie. What about you, Nick? When did you first see this?
I saw this not, well, it's 2022 now, so not last year, but 2 years ago. You're giving a weird look. What happened?
Sorry, I got a work slack and it scared the crap out of me. I was like, oh my God, what's happening? Sorry, disregard.
On a Sunday?
On a Sunday.
Criminal.
The slack noise happened and I was like, oh my God, what? Yeah, oh Lord. Okay, sorry. Reset.
Yeah, so I watched it in 2020. I think because you were raving about it, Dylan. And yeah, I liked it a lot. It's a very funny movie. I think Barbara Stanwyck.
Incredible.
Not to objectify her, but like, this character is so hot. Like, I'm sorry.
Oh my God. I mentioned to you guys yesterday the dresses in this movie, the costumes in this movie, like every single one. She just looks phenomenal in every
Edith Head is having a great time making like the sexiest dresses ever.
Okay, I teased this on our Matrix episode, but I think like in terms of screwball comedies,
yes,
there are three subtypes that I've come up with.
Okay,
there's the one where it's like a woman meets a man and hijinks ensue.
Sure.
Like,
so Lady Eve, Bringing Up Baby, What's
no,
Up Doc?
No, so I would say Bringing Up Baby, What's Up Doc, but Lady Eve, I think, falls into the second category, which is the one that I like better. And that's a woman is so much smarter than every man around.
That's What's Up Doc.
No, What's Up Doc is full hijinks.
Yeah, I mean, I love What's Up Doc, but wall to wall hijinks for sure.
Stanwyck, not Stanwyck.
If she was so smart,
it's definitely the smartest one in the.
If she was smarter, she would have gone with someone better than Ryan O'Neill. So that's like this and His Girl Friday, I think, definitely, which is like maybe my favorite noir. And then the third one is just movies with Nora Charles. So all of the Thin Man movies. Because that doesn't really fit into either, because she's not causing wacky hijinks, and she's not, I don't think she's as smart as Nick. Maybe
but they're, nearly they're, as smart.
They balance each other's smarts off each other.
Right, yeah. But Nick's the one who's, like, solving all the crimes, so.
Yeah.
I think she gets her own, she gets her own category.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ebert in the essay, right, he specifically draws a distinction between this movie and...
And Bringing Up Baby.
And Bringing Up Baby. Yeah, I was going to say,
what does Nick think of the fifth paragraph of the Ebert essay?
Oh, it's what I have highlighted as my quote to pull from. Yeah. I think he nailed it pretty well.
So it's interesting for me. I mean, I think he's exactly right. But I also, I mean, I'm going to ask you this, Dylan. What do you think of Henry Fonda in this movie and his character?
Well, Henry Fonda is one of my favorite actors ever. And his character is such a dud, but he plays him like such a dud that it's really funny to me.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where I landed too, where, because like it took me a bit to just be like, he's such like, Ebert kind of calls out that it's great that he's like the grounded straight man, but I'm like, but he's also so like almost to a fault. And Henry Fonda is so charismatic just on his own that I think it works okay. I think if that were
I think
different
it's so great
actor,
that, like,
I
this
would
movie
be
is
like,
trying to kill his charisma at every turn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially in the dinner party.
Well, in the dinner party, and even, and we'll get to it, but, you know, even in sort of the famous, like, really sexy scene that is good and that Ebert talks about, like, it's all her. Like, it's mm-hmm. all her. He, like...
He's just sitting there, like, having his face stroked.
Right, and frankly, looking uncomfortable, and which, you know, makes sense for the character and the plot and everything, but it's so funny to be like, this is just one of the most, like, amazingly sexy scenes, but it's... her giving 110% in order to make that happen, which just speaks to the, you know, amazingness of Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, she's the real star of this, and it's funny that she was nominated for an Oscar this year, but for a different movie that I'm not...
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen.
Good transition to Oscar talk. So this was 1941. This is the 14th Academy Awards. And
a very famous Oscar year.
A very famous Oscar year.
Which we've
year.
Talked about before.
Yes.
Is this the first Oscar year where it's like, how could they do this sort of thing?
Probably. It's definitely, because, I mean, I don't really remember any other earlier, like, controversies in that way. Yeah. Like, yeah.
This one had so much, like, baggage with it, too, because it was basically, like, the propaganda machine against... Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Although I will say most of the nominees I've heard are great.
Yeah, I mean, How Green Was My Valley is a really, really good movie.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And Here Comes Mr. Jordan gets nominated a lot, and I've heard that movie's excellent.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Maltese Falcon.
Oh, yeah. Sergeant York. Hitchcock, Suspicion.
Suspicion. Suspicion's a good movie. I don't think I would have given Stanwyck a best actress over Joan Fontaine in that, but I haven't seen Ball of Fire. I would have given it to her for this.
I'm sure we talked about this when we talked about this during the Citizen Kane, but this best actress lineup is so crazy. Who was nominated this
the
year.
Best?
Yeah. Barbara Stanwyck, Greer Garson, Olivia de Havilland, Betty Davis, Joan Fontaine. Crazy.
Okay, look at the best actor. Gary Cooper, Cary Grant, Walter Houston, Robert Montgomery, Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Woo!
The good old days, man. And Charles Coburn was also nominated this year, but for The Devil and Miss Jones?
I've heard that movie's dope.
I guess back in, studio times, you just had people who were there all making five movies a year anyway, so.
Yeah.
You could be nominated. But it's so funny looking back at the Academy Awards from so long ago. When you look at, like, the nominees for best scoring of a dramatic picture, and there's 20 nominees. It's like, what?
Best documentary. It's like every documentary that was made that
right.
year.
Right. There's one nominee in best special effects and one nominee in best art direction that are crossed out because they were disqualified or their nominations were withdrawn. Like, there's a lot going on.
She's running this show.
Here. Yeah. It's a little chaotic. Also, and again, probably talked about it, but we should mention it in this context because Lady Eve was nominated for Best Original Story. a category which ceased to exist after 1956.
It's a weird category.
Where basically how do they actually describe it here? This award can be a source of confusion for modern audiences. Yes. The Oscar for Best Story most closely resembles the usage of modern film treatments or prose documents that describe the entire plot and characters but lack dialogue. And then a screenwriter would convert the story into a full screenplay.
So it's the best elevator pitch.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's, it's literally like best treatment. Like best, here's an idea for a movie. So Barbara Stanwyck gets on a cruise ship and cons Henry Fonda and falls in love with him. Like, nominated.
Yeah, but that's like so little of what goes on, because then I don't know what even the treatment of this movie is, because
I mean, I presume it has to be sort of the double back, right? Like, that's what actually makes
that's what like the elevator pitch would be,
right? That's what actually makes this movie to me next level, and not just like, you know, because there's all kinds of movies that where there's a con man or con woman, but then they actually fall in love and they give up the con. But it's the doubling back. It's the con falls apart. She takes on a new identity.
She cons him again in the most like...
It only gets away with it because it's so brazen that no one believes you'd actually do that.
It's so funny.
It seems so stupid that it couldn't possibly work.
Yeah,
and that's the only reason that it works.
Yeah, it literally can't be her because she would never try something like this. And yet... Yeah.
I love this movie.
So yeah, that is, I think, what takes this to the next level, is sort of the wraparound with, you know, oh my God, Jean, and then Eve, and then Jean again. So we just have the one Oscar nomination, but hoo boy, is this movie a real favorite of the good old American Film Institute, our friends at AFI. This movie is on many lists, or at least...
Actually, it's only on two.
Well, it's on two lists. It's listed as being nominated for like five more, which I think is really funny. So this doesn't even want to look at. So just it's on 100 Years, 100 Laughs, number 55. And it's on 100 Years, 100 Passions, number 26, which, you know, I think that's both fair. And then it looks like it's always consistently being nominated for the 100 Years, 100 movies and then just not making the final cut. But also the Writers Guild of America ranked its screenplays the 52nd best ever written. So there you go. I am curious. I can't remember if we've dived into 100 Years, 100 Passions before.
I don't know that we have.
Because there is some.
Is number one gone?
You know, I already looked at it. I wish I could have played the game.
I'm looking at it, too. No, number two is Gone with the Wind. Number one is another movie that we've already covered.
Is it Greed? it's Casablanca. Right?
Yes, it's Casablanca.
Three was also remade this year.
Yeah, three is a new favorite of Nick's. Heck
Oh, yeah. Great movies. So
number
this was also,
eight is also a movie we've covered, kind of weirdly.
Broken Blossoms. That could fit.
I guess more than Greed, but you want to know what happens with their passions at the end of that movie?
Broken Blossoms?
Not good.
No.
Number eight is It's a Wonderful Life, which is a lot of things, but I don't really think of it as being a romance.
No, I don't think
that was.
It's got a great romance in it, but like
that was the face I was making. Like.
So I have a question for you too, because I just, you know, very embarrassing for me, have never seen Vertigo. Is Vertigo like a really great romance?
Abso-fucking-lutely not.
Okay. Is Vertigo on that list?
Yes, it's number 18.
In between Moonstruck and Ghost.
What?
One of the 100 greatest love stories in American cinema. Like,
did you see it number 24?
Is it Psycho? Is it fucking Peeping Tom?
It's King Kong.
Same level, honestly. Like, those are about as romantic.
Shout out number 28 is The Shop Around the Corner. Which I think all of us just watched, or at least
King Kong and Vertigo are higher than Shop Around the Corner and The Lady Eve.
It's who watches Vertigo and was like, I'm just like, my heart's a flutter watching that fucking movie.
I mean, we have Manhattan at number 66 down here, so they've made a lot of choices.
Oh yeah,
list.
They've
made some choices.
Oh boy.
Lady and the Tramp is number 95. Hey, that movie's about dogs.
Lady and the Tramp is very romantic.
That's more romantic than, you know, Vertigo.
I'll stand up for Lady King and the Tramp. King Kong.
I'm
movie.
Sorry to keep asking you these questions. Notorious? Is Notorious?
Oh, fuck yeah. That is
Notorious
romantic.
Notorious should be like a top five.
Okay, that
that's,
one. Okay.
That's all-time romantic.
And that's all the way
movie.
Down at 86.
That's so. Insane.
That's stupid.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Nick, I want to throw one your way. Number six, the number six movie on here. I'm going to list two stars. I want you to tell me the movie. We have Barbra Streisand and Robert Redford.
It's the movie that Criterion just released, isn't it?
Oh, did they?
Didn't they?
No.
I don't know.
Didn't they just release a Streisand movie last year? Maybe.
No, oh, you're thinking of Prince of Tides.
Yes, yeah.
No, that's
Nick
Nolte
and Barbra Streisand.
Oh, all right.
Wait, I'm sorry, Dylan, are you saying you've never heard of this movie?
I know it, but like very vaguely. Like it's just not.
This movie is a swooning drama or a swooning romantic.
But like, what is the passion if this isn't like, I don't know. It's The Way We Were.
Oh, I've heard of it. I've never.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what.
That's a movie for girls. That's like a very sort of swoony romantic, the one who got away, you know.
Sure.
They're going to meet back.
There's a lot of great movies. And Fair to Remember number five. That's a swoony romantic movie. Great movie. But like.
I'm about The Way We Were. I mean, Sydney Pollack. It's not like a anonymous movie, but.
I've got one other Lady Eve accolade to drop. It just missed the top 100 of the Sight and Sound poll.
Oh, okay.
Which this is we're getting it like I think this summer the new Sight and Sound
we
poll.
We should be a few months away.
It finished 110th, and it received votes from people including Justin Chang, the LA Times. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Zacharek?
Zacharek, I think.
I was going to say, I've never actually
said it out loud.
heard her name or spoken it out loud. So, but I mean, I like follow her on Twitter and I've read her writing and stuff. And then among the four directors is one Paul Schrader.
Man.
King.
Paul, when he's right, he's right.
He's right a lot.
What was his... He just posted
the Lost Daughter thing.
Well, yes, he respects the Lost Daughter. He was mad that he lost an award to it, but then watched it and had to shout it out as a good movie. No, he posted at the end of the year like his new list of best movies or favorite movies.
Oh, and he dropped off something. Was it Citizen Kane?
Maybe. But his list was really interesting. It's so funny.
I'll find it. I'm pretty sure I posted about it on Twitter. It can't be that long ago.
He's such an interesting guy because he sort of, in one way, like you watch his movies and you see how he like behaves on Facebook and the random shit he says, and you're like, yeah, that all tracks.
He says some stuff that it's like, oh yeah, this is like a man.
Exactly. And then every once in a while, he'll hit you with some like really sensitive take about something, and you're like, Paul, keep me guessing.
I mean, that's kind of like. His movies
True.
In a way like The Card Counter is this like sad lonely man movie and it's violent, and then there's like the moment where they go outside with all the lights and everything, and it's like, man,
I was looking for a good picture of that this morning and I couldn't find a good image, but
like that shit's so romantic.
So beautiful.
Okay, second thoughts. I think the time has come to let Citizen Kane go. It is, after all, the granddaddy of all-time best film lists, but I'm replacing it with The Conformist. Both are seminal masterpieces which changed the arc of cinema. The Conformist just means more to me. Hud replaces both The Searchers and Performance.
Hud was sort of a weird pick in my mind.
I thought Performance was a weird pick, even though that movie like really rules.
Yeah, true.
It's just a... I don't know.
Do we get... Conformist in the great movies? Nope. Conformist is not in Ebert's great movies.
That's dumb.
I just Googled Conformist, and I don't know what I thought was going to happen. And it's like, a conformist is a person. I'm like, no.
So his list
I've never heard of that movie. That's why I was Googling it.
Oh, really? Oh, it's a great movie.
It's a really good
Bertolucci?
Okay. Yeah, that's like a movie I cite as like maybe one of the top five best sci-fi movies. No, it's
no,
like
political, it's just
thriller. Oh, it's like Manchurian insane. Candidate kind of. Well, because when I Google when I Google, it's also like, would you like to read about Invasion of the Body Snatchers? But I guess it's just paranoia, sort of mind manipulation. Okay, gotcha.
I think it was around the same time that like all the 70s like paranoia thrillers, like the Parallax View type movies that were being made over here. This is like sort of the Italian period piece equivalent of that. So his list was Persona, Tokyo Story, Pickpocket, which feels pretty obvious if you've seen any. If you've seen that in any of Schrader's movies. Vertigo, Rules of the Game, Wild Bunch, Lady Eve, The Conformist, In the Mood for Love, and HUD.
Ah.
Good.
That's so So Lady Eve and Rules of the Game were the two that were on there that I was like, oh, Paul. Yeah. It's not all dark and awful and...
Yeah, In the Mood for Love, I suppose.
In the Mood for Love, yeah, true.
It's kind of a bummer, but I guess Rules of the Game is sort of a bummer, too.
Did you guys see that tweet that was, like, someone's, like, screenshotted In the Mood for Love and was like, it looks like a cross between Twin Peaks and Mad Men. This is my shit.
Yes. You know, people find things in all ways at all times, and whatever brings people into a...
Really want to know how that person reacted to In the Mood for Love.
They probably thought it was great. Probably if they, like, that... If they, like... Good
Twin
stuff.
Peaks and Mad Men. I mean, yeah. Two great like things.
What's not
sure? Good. It's just it's not that.
No, I mean, but the aesthetics definitely are like that. You know,
okay.
That's the but that is sort of where it begins, begins and ends. So, you know, but the aesthetics are not bad. That can probably keep you watching. So, sorry, I want to very quickly check and see before we zoom back out. I'm still looking at the Oscar. Movies because I had not heard of Here Comes Mr. Jordan, which apparently is a fantasy romantic comedy.
It's insane. It's like this one, it's a lot like A Matter of Life and Death, where some dude dies in a crash, but he's not supposed to. And they pick up his soul and they're like, oh, we should have returned you, but we already cremated your body. So we're going to take some guy who got murdered by his wife and put you in that body. And when he wakes up, he falls in love with the wife that murdered that guy.
What?
It's insane.
Yeah.
See, that's it. If we're talking best original story, like, what's the best elevator pitch? There.
That go over a newly dead corpse. I also just think it's funny that there's multiple movies around this time period that deal with, like, the bureaucracy of, like, angels and heaven. Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, no, got to take care of this issue. It's like, okay, people had really interesting ideas about how... angels and angels have superiors. Like, there's just a lot going on,
and the angel is played by Claude Rains.
Nice
movie, sold.
Yeah, sounds pretty good.
It's not streaming anywhere. It doesn't
of
look
course
like.
It's on Plex.
Is it really?
Yep.
I need to figure out Plex more. Is that how you watch?
I can never understand Plex.
I mean, we've got our Plex working pretty well, I think. I don't understand how it works. I just, like, ask Matt to make stuff happen on it, and he does. So that works out well for us. All right, should we talk about the Lady Eve?
Yeah, let's talk about
it. Okay.
We've already covered, like, half the plot.
I know. Right? Like, I was going to say, I don't...
The plot summary is, like, really...
Right. I will say, I didn't know anything about this movie going in, so when it, like, starts off, like...
With the cartoon.
The jungle.
Well, with the cartoon, but, like, in the jungle. We're, like, coming back from being in the Amazon. I was like, wait, I don't... Because I think the parts of this movie that I had sort of seen or seen clips or images from were really that middle, later chunk, like, when she's Lady Eve and they're at, like, mm-hmm. the house party and stuff. And so I was like, I thought this was more of, like, that kind of...
A dapper,
situation.
Like, fancy
exactly,
people.
House party, comedy of manners kind of thing. But no, it starts off with our buddy Henry Fonda, Charles Pike, Hopsy, who loves snakes and is coming back from a trip in the Amazon. And he gets on this ocean liner, and that's where Barbara Stanwyck, and he is her father, actually, right? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Like, they are
father and daughter.
They might lie about everything else.
Okay. That's kind of it. Just at one point I was like, wait, is he even her father? Or, like,
she calls him by, what is it, Harry?
Yeah, she calls him Harry. And so that's what kind of made me question. But I, father-daughter con man team who get on fancy boats and con people out of their money through mostly, it sounds like, cheating at cards. I did laugh very much at one point. The camera pans over to like a big warning sign on the boat that is like, be careful, there are professional gamblers who will take all your money.
That made me laugh so much.
Yeah.
I will say the introduction between the boats, I love the sort of editing scheme where it goes from like the yacht that's like boom, boom, mm-hmm. and then it goes to like Pike's or Hopsy's boat that's coming. It's like,
yeah, it's like just spitting, like, little, like, yeah,
like mud out of its little what is that thing, a foghorn?
Well, yeah, whatever the little pipe thing is. But yeah, so he gets on the fancy boat, and this is where they all meet up. And so Barbara Stanwyck and our Jean, I should say, and her father, the fake colonel, are running these scams. They're going to scam him. There's this great scene at the beginning where she is sort of watching him in the dining room.
I love that
scene. That's like, I like stopped it and went back to the beginning and watched it again.
It's hilarious.
It's what hooked me the first time watching
it. It's so funny, and it's so visually inventive, the way he uses the mirror. Like, I don't feel like I'd seen a lot of that ever in a movie from this time period. So she's observing him and basically, okay, here's this rich guy. Like, he's this Newmark. All the women, young or not, on this boat are like throwing themselves at him and dropping handkerchiefs and giggling and doing all this stuff.
I haven't seen that move before.
And she's watching it happen by holding up her like compact mirror, and then and narrating what's happening. But it does like a like actual sort of camera in camera. So when you're looking at the compact mirror, you're just actually fully seeing what's happening. And it was very visually inventive and really fun.
Yeah, it looks great. It's so like her commentary is so funny, just like how every other woman is too, I don't know if dumb is the right word, but just haven't done the legwork to like hack this nerd, basically.
Yeah, they're doing their basic stuff. They're handkerchief dropping and sauntering by and stuff like that.
Yeah, and she figures them out like immediately. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It reminds me of a really good scene, speaking of Woody Allen again, but there's a great scene in Annie Hall where they're just like sitting on a, Alvy and Annie are just like sitting on a bench in the park and like describing people as they walk by and like making fun of them. And it's just like a really fun, nice, quiet moment. And this kind of reminded me of that, of just her like describing every woman who's like trying her hardest to like get this dude to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we can. Oh, I don't know totally. If it's recording or not. Yeah.
I mean, okay. As long as on Audacity. Okay. I mean, if we're the only ones who can hear you, that's fine. Sorry. You just sound so sad. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, yes, it's very funny. I love the scene. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the standout.
Yeah.
Not the standout, but it's one of the standout scenes in the movie. And I remember the first time I watched it. Couple summers ago, it was like what made me like sit up and go, oh, this movie's like up to some shit.
Yeah
And then she eventually gets his attention by just tripping him.
Right.
Well, she just realized like that's the only way to break his barrier,
right? And there's there's a lot of talk in the behind the scenes of this movie, in the Ebert essay and other places, about all the pratfalls, because it literally is just Henry Fonda just falling down over and over so many times, and to the point where Preston Sturges apparently thought they were going to make him cut out a bunch of the pratfalls, and he was excited they got to keep him in. But this is sort of the first one where she just fully trips him. And is that why they leave together? Because he broke her shoe? I already can't.
Yeah, okay, her tripping him breaks.
Right, like breaks her heel or whatever. Yeah. And so they go back to his stateroom first. Amazing staterooms on this ship, by the way. Like, I would get on a boat if boats were actually, or like cruises were this nice anymore.
And if the CDC wasn't actively recommending against ever getting.
If I could time travel and erase the pandemic, and then although I never would have, I love like the water and boats, and I am not like afraid of boats or water or anything like that at all. But cruises have just always seemed so gross. Like even pre-pandemic, people are always getting sick on those things.
Yeah,
like,
there are always some kind of pandemics, like non.
They're always coronavirus just, like, little mini, pandemics, right? Just like little mini norovirus pandemics, just like floating around. but it does seem so luxurious to just be on a big fancy boat, big fancy stateroom and dining room and all that good stuff. Oh, wild tangent. You can cut this out. This is so dumb. But I keep seeing ads for like this for new like Virgin Cruise Lines. Have you guys seen ads for this like during sporting events or anything? So the Virgin company of the airlines or whatever the hell else they do these days now are really pushing hard because of course now's the time to get into cruises for like adults only cruises that are like no kids, fine dining, top-notch entertainment, and always for like 2 seconds I'm like, well, that looks like fun, and then I remember that you're on a cruise ship and just it all seems like a terrible idea all over again. But this cruise ship, very fancy, very nice. They go back to I also should mention one of the reasons why, as we talked about, people are having trouble getting his attention is because he has his nose in like a book about snakes. Like that's just like all he cares about.
Are snakes necessary?
Are snakes necessary? Which is just amazing.
It's
the
best book title. Oh my god,
it's so good. It's so funny. And they,
I do want to quickly mention. Oh, yes. There's this interesting little part of the Wiki page that is. Reference to just, I don't know, it's not a very good reference, but I think it has an interesting thing to say. Film scholars have observed the theme of fall of man implied by the film's title in the literal sense. The fall is evidenced by Pike's frequent pratfalls, and figuratively, he falls from innocence as he's lured into Jean's deceptive plots.
I mean, sure. I mean, the Lady Eve, right? And snakes. I mean, that has, there's something
snakes,
there for sure.
When she meets him for the first time, or sees him for the first time, she throws an apple on him.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, true.
There's a lot of the downfall of man between these
quite
two.
Quite literally downfall of man, and also, yes, and then also sort of
snakes,
being exposed to
apples.
And then learning about the evils and corruptions of the world.
But you know what? They just want a boat. And then the end of the day,
that's
what wins. That's,
although their first solo time is interrupted by there being an actual snake in his room.
I love that he comes, when they go back to the room, he's like, oh, there's Emma in the back.
Right.
He's like, she's like, you have another girl here?
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's a snake.
Yeah. Ah! Which, fair. Very, very relatable. So she goes.
The running and screaming.
The running and screaming, yes. At finding out that there is a live snake in the room. But so she runs off back to her own room. And then this, straight into our sexy flirting scene, which I'll go ahead and just sort of mention because Ebert, the beginning.
Oh, he loved to write about that scene.
Yeah, the beginning of his essay. I'll just read this section now, where he says, if I were asked to name the single scene in all of romantic comedy that was sexiest and funniest both at the same time, I would advise beginning at 6 seconds past the 20-minute mark in Preston Sturges' The Lady Eve and watching as Barbara Stanwyck toys with Henry Fonda's hair in an unbroken shot that lasts 3 minutes and 51 seconds. I just think it's kind of funny how Ebert broke that down. Like, go to 20 minutes and 6 seconds and watch for 3 minutes and 51 seconds. Like,
it's stuff like that that is the reason why David Lynch doesn't put chapters on his DVDs.
Is that true?
That's what I heard. It's because he didn't want people skipping to certain scenes in Mulholland Drive.
Oh, interesting.
Weird.
I mean,
I don't know how true that is, but
well, now I just hadn't heard that, or I didn't realize or hadn't heard that he doesn't have chapter breakdowns.
Yeah, none of,
but that
yeah, none of his movies have chapter breakdowns.
Interesting. I am very guilty. Well, not maybe in the way that some people would fear, but I am very guilty of like putting on something and like, going to the scene that I want to watch and
you know,
going through the chapter menus. And I'm sure filmmakers just can't stand that
that
happens. But sorry, I do that all the time. Yeah. I rewatch scenes that I like all the time. But so we have this, and we already mentioned it a little bit earlier, but this almost 4 minute long sequence that is, you know, them pressed up close to one another, and she's got full charm attack on, and Henry Fonda is befuddled, I guess, and receptive to her charms, but mostly just seems kind of terrified of what's happening. But again, she's so charismatic that I think she really drives that home.
So I want to talk about something called the Hays Code.
Oh, yes, let's talk Hays Code.
How did this get passed?
I don't know. Well, I mean, they don't show anything.
They don't show anything, but there's...
I guess
so many moments where she's just like, I want to bone this dude.
They're just like squished up very close to one of their...
Yeah, like they don't ever kiss and they clearly don't even end the night together.
Right.
Yeah. So
that all fits, but oh boy, just barely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in the Ebert essay where he also calls out the other sort of skirting the Hays Code thing, which is like that you're going to have to kneel down or something like that.
Oh my God.
Which is like, whoa, okay. But yeah, and I've already talked about her like amazing outfit that she's wearing that I thought was like a dress with a little cutout in the middle, but it's like a little two, it's really like a two-piece thing, which that would be so in style now. It's wild. Like that, that is a very timeless look she has going on. But yeah, they get away with, get away with is not the right way of saying it, but definitely knew how to go right up to what would come across as like sexy without it crossing the line and getting them having to cut it out or anything.
They were crooked, but never common.
Yeah. I love that line. That's so good. Line. That is such a good line. Yeah, I like that a lot. But yeah, so after they have this great moment, like I said, they don't spend the night together or anything. And the con sort of proceeds for a little bit, where her, you know, they're still playing cards. And at first they let him win money because you got to, you know, you got to have multi-stages. You can't just rip somebody off right away. You got to like let them win some so you can take all the money back. And from pretty early on, Charles is his name. Charles is it his valet or whatever the guy who's like his nanny or Muggsy. Like he's skeptical from minute one. So he, you know, very early on is sort of poking around trying to like, okay, this is not all that it seems. These people are trying to con you.
What's the actor's name? Cause he's great in this.
Oh, he's so good.
William Demarest?
Demarest or Demarest.
He's so funny.
Muggsy, whose real name is Mr. Murgatroyd, which I just like saying Murgatroyd.
Murgatroyd.
So that's a really fun name. Yeah, I love this actor. And I was trying to figure out what I would know him from. I mean, he was like a...
he's got a million credits,
He's like a vaudeville guy. Like, so he's been like... It's truly... You look at his Wikipedia and his like partial filmography is like 100-something... credit. So he's just one of those guys that is around in everything for years and years, but he's so funny.
He's in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I don't remember him in that. I mean, I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Maybe he's like the second lead.
Since high school,
He's in Sullivan's Travels and Palm Beach Story, actually. So maybe we all just need to
catch up with those.
Do a deeper dive into the Sturgis. But yeah, he's really funny in this.
Yeah, he is. Really funny in this. But yeah, so they, you know, they're doing the con, but Jean is falling in love for real with Hopsy, with Charles, because, you know, he's a charming guy despite being a bit of a dud. And so she's basically trying to protect him from the con. Like, her dad is still trying to steal all of his money, and she's undermining it because she's genuinely in love with him. And then, alas, unfortunately, Muggsy, who we were just talking about, does end up finding them out and being able to show Charles that, they're conning him. Sorry. So it falls apart and she's scorned and brokenhearted. And that's kind of the end of our first act of this movie, which I really had no idea where it was going from here.
Where it was going
to I have to say, like, when it got to this crazy part, it's crazy because you're like, that entire secret, like, that could be the whole movie. It could all be set on the ship. It could all be about the cons and the back and forth and the trying to figure it out.
And it'd be a good movie. It'd be a nice movie.
Right. But instead, after their journey ends and they, you know, he calls it up with her, but basically found out, no more for you. She decides to take on this new identity and do a whole new con, which is how we end up in sort of what I mentioned earlier is what I more thought the movie was going to be before I watched it, which is this like hijinksy comedy of manners where she takes on this new identity of the titular Lady Eve Sidwich, as a like high society lady, working now with another con man, Sir Alfred McGlennon Keith, who I love this guy. What was his name? Pearly? Yeah.
Is that his old con name?
His old con name. Like, yeah, I think Pearly, that sounds right. This guy, like, so funny. His whole, like, pulling off this con as, like, this sir, this sort of, like, yeah, fancy sir, but he seems, like, so goofy.
And he's pretending to be British as well, right? Like, yes, isn't he not British? He's like a former boat gambler, hustler.
They're taking on, and what's so funny is, okay, so she's coming back as Lady Eve and quote unquote adopts a British accent, but like she does not, at least as far as I could tell, go super hard on the British accent.
Oh no.
Yeah, like she's not doing a Dick Van Dyke.
Like. Well, thank God for that. But it's almost just more like a mid-Atlantic. Like she kind of just like classes. Up her way of speaking and then say she's doing an English accent. It's like, okay, but it just goes to show that she's not wearing like makeup. She's not wearing things on her face to disguise her appearance. Like she is.
She didn't dye her hair.
She did not dye her hair. Did not dye her hair, put a wig on. I think they say at one point, like, wouldn't she have like dyed her hair platinum or something if this were a better attempt at a disguise? But no, she just puts on a fancy dress and talks a little bit differently and re-enters his life and the scene as allegedly an entirely different lady.
Her vibe is way different as Lady Eve, though.
Yes.
Like, it's very like bubbly, but not in a ditzy way.
Yeah.
She's like a raconteur at the party. Everyone's like immediately attracted to her. Her like goofy stories about Connecticut.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
I love the way she says Connecticut. And speaking of the costumes, like she wore that sort of, you know, sexy black two-piece dress number on the boat as Jean, and then she dresses like an all-white sort of like glamorous sparkly evening gown as Lady Eve.
Does have this all-white dress as Jean when she's on the bow of the ship.
Oh yes, when you're right, she does have that on the bow.
Edith Head gets like these long flowy
later on. I think it's when she's as Lady Eve and has like the big feather.
Yes.
Thing. Oh, just every look in this movie is.
So lucky you got this movie.
I know. I was thinking about that when we get to the end of the season and I get to pick my favorite fashions. This one is. There is no shortage of great fashions. But so we sort of already really covered the gist of this section, which is she shows up and he's like, man, she sure seems like Jean. Muggsy is like, yeah, it's her. It is
the same dame.
It's the same dame. And basically she gets away with it because it's so brazen. And he's like, well, no, like she wouldn't do this. If
she's conning me, she would try to look different.
Right. She wouldn't just show up looking the same. Like, who would do that? And it's
fair question.
It's a con when you think about it.
Is it? I really have to say that I think Hopsy is...
Well, not the so brightest stupid. Bulb in the... Yeah. It comes back to his sort of dudness, where you're like, buddy.
Yeah. He's quite a dum-dum.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, good for him. He ends up getting where he needs to be because in large part of how stupid he is. So, you know, it worked out for him. But, yeah, he's so dumb.
He really is. Like, for someone... You can see why he has to have this, like, minder. Like... Why, even as like a grown man, he actually needs Muggsy around to like keep him from just like literally falling.
Babysit
into
him?
Yeah. To like be his nanny, be his minder, his babysitter. Like he can barely stay upright, let alone stay out of trouble and being conned. But yeah, they have a lot of, you know, they still have great chemistry. She still is so charming. Are there any other like sort of highlights of their interactions in this scene? I feel like it's just, yeah, her at the party being beloved by everybody, and he's still falling down all over the place.
Falls down, has food spilled on him.
Yeah. Yep, pretty much.
We got to talk about the horse.
Oh, God, thank you. That's it. We got to talk about the horse.
Scene of the movie.
Best supporting actor, the horse.
The horse.
and it's one of those scenes. So they're having a sort of
like has there been a better horse in a movie?
I mean, There is the horse that killed the daughter in Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, I would say this is a better horse. I would say this is a better horse than the various horses that kill various of Scarlett O'Hara's family members. Yes,
exactly. That's the only other horse that popped into my head. No,
but so there's like good horse movies out there.
Black Beauty. We could go the
National
Horse
Velvet.
Godfather.
Like, yeah, there's
my Cossie will be remiss if I don't mention Kentucky Pride, which is like one of our all-time favorite movies. Sure. Have you guys seen that?
No,
heard of that?
No,
have not.
So it's a John Ford silent movie. Mm. Like, it's like a racehorse, but told through the view of a horse.
Ooh, mm. Interesting.
I think sort of thing. That's what I gather.
Lean on Pete from Lean on Pete.
Oh, I never saw Lean on Pete. That's a good movie. That looked good.
Yeah.
Warhorse.
Warhorse. The rider.
The Berg, oh, baby.
Sir.
So there's lots
Be brave.
Of good horses. I think this one.
Thank you for doing more warhorse lines.
Yeah. I think this is the
The horse from the nest.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Rough times for that horse, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the best horse.
Oh, I forgot about that movie from last year. Yes, yeah. I was like, wait, what's the nest? Yeah, I saw that movie.
I was thinking about that after Spencer.
How much
actually?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think Spencer. There. I think Spencer's better, but they have similar, like both sort of like domestic dramas, shot like a horror movie.
Yeah. How much of the horse in the nest is actually alive when it's on screen, though?
It's
there for
time.
A while. Yeah.
It makes it about 2/3 of the way through the movie, I think, before it gets buried.
Yeah, but a lot of its time in the it's
a
just
lot
sort
of
lying dead on the ground.
Is, yeah, yeah. There is.
I just found out Carrie Coon is from Copley, which is like 5 minutes that way from
where
I am. Yeah, she's
never
like
heard
she
of
graduated
Copley.
From. Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like a part of Akron. It's
sure.
Like where my brother and sister live, but she graduated from the high school there, like. A few years before me, because
wow.
She's not that much older than me. Interesting. That's all.
I'm still looking at the results from my Google of horse movies.
Horse movies?
Yeah. There was a movie when I was little about a girl who did horse diving, like that super terrifying old-timey thing of like riding a horse. It's not called Wild at Heart because that's a different movie.
That's a different
Wild movie. Hearts Can't Be Broken.
Thank you. Did you Google horse diving and get there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. I loved that movie as a kid.
There
I
has
think
to
she
be
might
a Bob's...
blind or something. I don't know. I haven't seen it since I was a real little kid. Yeah, Gabrielle Anwar. Mm-hmm. Disney movie from 1991. Good stuff.
I was convinced there must have been a Bob's Burgers episode. Used that title, but it doesn't appear as
there should. You're right. That's a perfect movie title for them to like. Wild
yeah.
Bob's can't be something. Yeah.
Yeah, especially with Tina's.
Oh sure.
I guess the Bob's Burgers trailer is going to come out tomorrow.
Oh, is that tomorrow? Oh my god.
Yeah.
I watched like 4 episodes of Bob's Burgers last night too.
You watched 4 movies last night. What are
I
you
know.
Doing, Janet?
I stayed up very late last night. That's why I'm so sharp today. But yes. Horse. This horse movie. So Barbara Stanwyck, Henry Fonda, Charles, and Barbara as Eve are having like a little outdoor romantic moment with one another. And the scene starts off with this horse in the background that at first you kind of just think is like a not very good horse.
You
like it's,
yeah.
It's kind of just like in the shot. It's kind of just like sticking its head in the background and you're like, oh well,
what are yeah. Why is this?
Why
horse
aren't they?
You
yeah,
don't expect where the. You have no idea where the scene's going.
Right, you kind
going.
Of just think like, oh, that horse is not very well trained, and they just had to deal with it being in the background. Like it's just framed weird, and then as this romantic scene goes on, the horse just starts like sticking its head fully in between them, looking basically straight at the camera. Basically just like nuzzling Henry Fonda's head. It is
it's so funny.
It's kind of impossible to describe. You really do kind of have to see it to get a sense of what's happening here, but it's amazing.
The way Fonda tries to act through the scene.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny, but even funnier is Stanwyck just not even noticing the horse
yeah.
the entire time.
Yeah, she,
well, of course she does, but she's just
like
she's ignoring
by
it. Yeah.
She's
kind
of like
still
whatever.
In
yeah. Oh, it is quite funny. Excellent
it's so
horse.
Funny.
So yeah, that's their sort of romantic interlude scene, which has a horse in it. But yeah, they court. They decide to get married. Until they get married, and then they, I guess, not really run off together, but get on the train together for their honeymoon. And so what exactly is her, remind me what her plan was here. So it was just to marry him and then basically say
torture him
and say all that stuff about how, like,
yeah,
all of her previous, like, she'd eloped before and all of her previous boyfriends. And
I love how she's like, I forget what it's like, Robert and Rich, like, she has like two ones that keep on sounding the same. And
yeah.
He's like, oh my god,
they just keep repeating. And basically
he's like, so you went home the night before? No,
that,
you're
that
out
night,
for
she's like,
weeks,
no, weeks.
Yeah, and basically makes him, you know, feel so unhappy and lied to and everything that he, like, literally just
jumps off the train
and gets off the train. Yeah. Just sort of is like, bye, I'm out of here. So her revenge, I guess, at this stage has been enacted. But of course, you know, she still loves him.
He is Hopsy, after all.
Her whole, plot of revenge and, like, why she hates him so much is just because she feels hurt because he didn't trust that she was going to tell him the truth.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like that he wouldn't listen to her explain that she was going to come clean, and he basically, as soon as he found out about, you know, their cons, that he, yeah, wouldn't listen to her, turned on her. And so, yeah, this all comes from that and that sort of lack of trust. And then so after they part ways, it's her, can't remember if it's her dad's idea or who, but part of the
idea
is
divorce.
You can, yeah, get a big divorce settlement. Like, you're married, you're not going to be divorced by a rich guy. There's a lot of money that you can get from that. But no, it's all still personal for her. And so she's been talking to, or she's talking to Charles's father, who just says, you know, this is personal. He needs
to tell
me. We haven't
talked enough about the dad.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because he shows up in the second half.
The intro scene of him is so funny, where he's just walking down the stairs and singing a song.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
It's just the most crass. And there's the end where he has, like, two big
He's,
plate.
Like, drumming with the food.
He is so eccentric. Oh, he also starred in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah, he did.
Interesting.
And Birth of the Nation, baby.
He's Friar Tuck in the...
the cartoon?
No, the Errol Flynn.
Damn it.
Adventures of Robin Hood. That's why he looks familiar. According to his Wikipedia page, he started off as had an early career as a slender leading man, but transitioned into a stout character actor.
He's got a great voice.
He has a great voice. That's why, like, the stuff with, like, yeah, him singing and stuff is so funny. He wears blackface
in
Birth of a Nation, and he plays a Chinese role in Todd Browning's The Highlanders.
Oh,
God
boy.
Damn it. I mean, people who were making movies in the 1910s, stuff went down.
Listen, I don't expect anyone around in the 1910s to have good politics. Let's be honest. He's in My Man Godfrey. I think he's the girl's parents in that. It's a good movie.
I need to see that one.
Yeah. Okay. It turns out he might have been a crazy person. But that's
this
might be our Wikipedia page deep dive. It's been a while.
We gotta do one. What's it say?
Wow! I just read the first sentence.
So it's been a while since we've had a Wikipedia page. Now, this guy, I don't think he had any sort of, like, tragic death or anything. It sounds like he maybe was not just a guy.
That's not so bad.
Well,
that's not. I thought it was going to go.
Okay. So this is, to be clear, we're talking about Eugene Pallette, who was in Birth of a Nation, among some other things, and talking about his transition to sound films, talks about how director Otto Preminger clashed with Pallette and claimed he was an admirer of Hitler and convinced that Germany would win the war. Yeah. Refused to sit at the same table with a black actor in a scene set in a kitchen. You're out of your mind. I won't sit next to somebody.
Okay. I feel like I need to be very clear that that was not the part that I was reading when I said that's not that bad.
We can't say. Yeah, it's kind of snuck down here in the Wikipedia page. That's why I was like, oh, he seemed like such a funny character. And then you read down into it. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, did you see the later life section?
That's what I was talking about.
Insane.
Yes. So that I started at the later life section and then I moved up.
Okay.
The N word and I was like, oh, that caught my eye. Why is this here on his Wikipedia page? But yes, the later life section, it turns out he was some sort of weird doomsday prepper, but in the 40s. In 1946, convinced that there was going to be a world blowup by atomic bombs, the hawkish Paulette received considerable publicity when he set up a mountain fortress on a 3,500-acre ranch near Imnaha, Oregon, as a hideaway from universal catastrophe. The fortress reportedly was stacked with a sizable herd of prize cattle, enormous supplies of food, and had its own canning plant and lumber mill. And then when that didn't happen, he just got rid of it and moved back to L.A.
2 years.
Yeah. He never appeared in another movie, however. Gee, you think?
Amazing.
Wow. Hold on. It gives his address. He died at age 65 from throat cancer at his apartment at 10835 Wilshire Boulevard. I know which building that is.
Why is his address on
Wikipedia? Well, I think that's like kind of a famous apartment building.
Is it? That's
It's in the Westwood. It's in the Wilshire corridor near Westwood. Yeah, that's walking distance from my apartment.
So I've talked about.
Oh my God! No, this is really close to your apartment.
It's really close to my apartment. Yeah, it's just on the other side of UCLA. It's like
I've talked about my neighborhood. Matt Farley a couple times on the show. He made the movies "Don't Let the River Be Sketch," even "Local Legends."
Oh yes, yes.
And in "Local Legends," he just puts his phone number in the movie. And he's like, yeah, if you want to, like, call me, like, just give me a call. Here's my phone number. And okay. He puts his, like, phone number on the back of his CDs and stuff
that. That's weird. A choice you can make.
So I've been tempted to just, like, call him and be like, hey. But I don't know. He must be into it enough that he's doing it on a movie that
people are actually watching. Seen, yeah. Well, the
oh, my God. Do you guys know who he plays in Birth of a Nation?
No.
Union Soldier.
Abraham Lincoln.
What?
Oh yeah,
damn it, Nick.
I'm not looking at filmography. It says Union Soldier uncredited.
I know. I'm sorry. Oh. I was trying to do it.
Oh, you're doing a bit. Okay. Sorry.
No. Yeah.
Well,
as opposed to
that Todd Browning movie, The Highbinders, where he plays Hop Woo. So there's that. Anyway, the end of his Wikipedia is that he has.
It's
a
like
star-
saying he plays Cho Chang.
Is that he has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? So congrats to him. Sorry, where were we?
Okay.
It's been a while since we've had somebody. I mean, granted, at least...
Oh, they're getting divorced, yeah.
At least that's he didn't die horrifically. It wasn't, like, disfigured in a car accident or commit murder himself, so it's not as bad as some of our Wikipedia deep dives we've done, but Doomsday Prepper and Virulent Racist is special also. But...
We did just have Virulent Racist with Nico in the Dolce Vita, though.
Yep.
That was an interesting Wikipedia rabbit hole.
That's a bummer. Yeah. Sad. Okay. She reaches out to our new favorite actor playing Charles's father.
Is he?
Whose name I guess is Horace. To basically say that, like, she doesn't want money. She just wants like a face to face conversation. She just wants to talk to him face to face and hear it from him that the marriage is over. And otherwise does not need any money.
A cent, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, Charles refuses that, but the dad tips her off that Charles is going to be getting back on another ocean liner, so she arranges to get back on that same ship, except for now she's Jean again, and basically immediately he was like, oh, Jean, you're back. Didn't know how good I had it with you.
The con artist that was trying to scheme me out of $33,200. This is much better. By the way, did the inflation calculation we have?
Yes, please.
What do you want to guess for $3,200?
No, wasn't it $32,000?
Was it $32,000?
Wasn't it?
I do not remember. If it was,
wait. Because doesn't he start owing him $1,000 and they do double or nothing?
Oh, maybe. But then that would get you to 3,000. 1,000 to 3,200. Yeah.
No, they do Double or Nothing. So then he gets to 2,000, 4,000, 8,000,
60,000. Oh, I see what you're saying. 000. Oh, God. 32,000's got to be like, I don't know.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. Like
a few hundred thousand?
Yeah, I would say like 500,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 500,000.
Close. 605,000.
Hutch.
Yeah. Okay.
Double.
Who has that amount of money?
Rich people. Brewery heirs. Heirs to ale fortunes.
It's so funny when he like chastises her for not knowing the difference between ale and beer, and then he's like, or it's the other way around. I don't know. But they're very
exactly. It's so good. He explains it. It's like, or it's the other way around. Different things. But so she ends up back on the boat, and then we have truly one of the greatest endings to a movie of all time.
This entire final sequence, top tier.
We're speaking of, you know, we mentioned Dylan, I think before we're talking about like the Hays Code and everything and how like they don't kiss or anything. They do a lot of kissing here. All of a sudden it's like they are back and they are kissing all over this boat. And sort of, you know, confessing their love for one another and going all the way back to her cabin. Her cabin? His cabin? Anyway, going back to...
It's his because
Muggsy's there. Sorry, going back to his cabin. That's when he sneaks out the door.
That's so funny.
And we have this great final sort of pair of lines or like a suite of lines, which, you know, spoilers if you've somehow made it this far into this podcast and haven't watched this movie. But where he says, like, I have to confess to you that I'm married. And she says, so am I,
darling.
Which in of itself, I was like, that's great. That's a great ending. I love it. And then after they go in, the door cracks back open. Muggsy comes out because he was in the room and ends it by saying positively the same day.
Same dame.
Ugh. Just what a crackerjack movie. Yeah. Ends great. And fun. And presumably they lived happily ever after. And it is a really like nice, you know, rom-com ending. You get that last good line. It really, and Ebert draws the, you know, sort of references the nobody's perfect. It's just like that. It's a very similar, just one great line, you're out. Good movie. Yeah. Anything else we wanted to highlight that we didn't touch on? I think we touched on all the actors and characters and bits. We shouted out the horse. That was important.
Mostly the horse.
Yeah.
Like, I love that horse.
Yeah.
Oh. He almost upstages Barbara Stanwyck.
He does. The only other outfit I didn't mention is her, or I vaguely mentioned it, but her dress for, like, the wedding, like, the elaborate white wedding dress, and it's kind of, like, jeweled and everything, and it's gorgeous. Just added to the list of amazing costumes.
I like his white tux, too.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of people look good in white tuxes, but
he really looks good in everything.
Like, that's...
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
It's Henry Fonda.
Yeah, he is a good-looking guy. And they're both... I was looking up, like, how... Because, you know, I obsessively look up how old everybody is in movies, and I think he's, like, 35 or 36 here. Cause I think he's born in 05, and this is 41. So, yeah, good-looking guy. Any other thoughts? No? You want to go thumbs up, thumbs downs, ratings?
Yeah, we could do it.
Okay. Dylan, thumbs up?
Up.
Nick?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up from me. And how many stars, Dylan?
4.
Nick?
I have 4.5 on Letterboxd, so it's like kind of in between a 3.5 out of 3.5 and 4, but I'm gonna go 4.
Good.
Peer pressure. I'm the same in terms of kind of in between 3.5 and 4, but yeah, 4.
Good, for sure.
So
I feel like bumping it to a 4 out of 4 is easier than bumping it to a 5 out of 5.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's like close to a 5.
Yeah.
For me. So I think it's a 4.
Is there any, we've already read from some of the Ebert sections. Are there any other Ebert quotes we didn't mention that we wanted to highlight?
My main two sections were already mentioned.
Yeah. The one I wanted to bring up was just like the Howard Hawks saying that the flaw in bringing up baby is that everyone in it is a screwball, and that this kind of fixes that problem.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a pretty good essay, I thought.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. So, yeah. That's it for Lady Eve. Fun movie. We'll watch again. You guys have the Criterion edition?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Okay. And Bogdanovich is actually in
one
of them.
He does the intro.
Oh, interesting. That makes sense. That tracks. All right, so should we transition into what we've been watching for the past month?
Yeah, for a month, yeah. I don't even know that mine's complete, because I noticed I was looking at my Letterboxd diary yesterday and there were like things that weren't on there, because apparently sometimes the date doesn't show up and it doesn't put it in your diary.
Oh. Yeah, I think it depends on exactly how you log it. If you just sort of...
Yeah,
it's weird. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know why sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But I went back and like added a date to one of them and it showed up. So I don't know if like maybe I accidentally deleted the date on the ones that weren't showing up. So,
all right. Who wants to go first?
I can. Oh,
all right. Yeah, Dylan, you go first.
All right. Let's see. I have a lot. Got to pick and choose. I've seen... Okay, the first one I saw for sure since we last talked, movie called Random Harvest, which watched that one with my grandma. It was her favorite movie as a kid, so that was really cool to watch. I watched Visconti's... Where's Random Harvest on list of 100 passions? That movie is super romantic.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway. La Notte Bianche, the Visconti movie, based on the short story White Nights by Dostoevsky, which I was... On the Wikipedia page for the original story, they have like 20 different movies that were based off of this one short story by Dostoevsky. It's pretty crazy. Some really, really big directors on that list. Are you looking at it, Jana?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now, actually.
Okay. We'll do a quick pause.
Sorry. We both like looking.
It's really cool how many movies...
Bresson did one?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Bresson, Pierrev, S.P. Yanathan... I don't know how I'm saying that. A lot of Bollywood/Indian movies were based off that story. Watch Shop Around the Corner. Good movie.
Yeah, fun movie.
Great movie.
Oh, that was on the Passions, right? Just not above King Kong or...
I watched Shop Around the Corner on Christmas Eve with my family, where my mom said, "You know who I don't like? Jimmy Stewart." And I said, "Okay, Mom." I think he overacts. I think he's just too big. And I was like, well, that's, you know, I disagree, but I think that's an okay opinion to have. But it was just really funny that my mom, who was barely paying attention to the movie, first goes, "Man, these old movies really are good, aren't they?" And I said, "Yes, they are." But then she followed up with, "You know who's not really good? Jimmy Stewart." I'm like, okay, Mom.
Have you guys ever seen the John Oliver thing about Jimmy Stewart?
I don't think so.
He plays the clip from... Oh, what's the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where he's like at the end with the big speech, and he says he wasn't a good actor. They were all bad back then, but Jimmy Stewart was especially the worst of them all.
I also need to correct the record. I think on our It's a Wonderful Life episode, I said I had never watched it because my parents didn't like it. What I found out this past Christmas is actually my parents have never seen it because they just are uninterested.
Because your mom doesn't.
My mom doesn't like Jimmy Stewart and doesn't have really the you know, was kind of surprised to be reminded that old movies are good by Shop Around the Corner. So she just never had any interest in watching It's a Wonderful Life. Doesn't really like Jimmy Stewart, and so that's why I never watched it, because my parents were just uninterested. Not that they didn't like it. And I said, sure. Well, you know, it's pretty good, and they were like, eh. So sorry. Continue. That's that.
I watched Kiarostami's 24 Frames, which blew me out of the water. Liked that a lot more than I expected. French Dispatch, which... Hit or miss? Hit and miss? Liked the third story a lot.
I liked it better than... I probably liked it the best. Well, I'll talk about it when I do mine. But I think I probably liked it the best out of the three of us, it sounds like.
I liked it quite a bit, but I'm pretty mixed on it. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so we're probably around the same.
I have it like a 3.5 out of 5. So, watched Gertrude, Dreyer movie, his last film. So good. Watched Tick, Tick, Boom. All right.
Tick, Tick, Boo.
Tick, Tick, No.
I like how neither of you could fully commit to Tick, Tick, Boo. It's...
No, yeah. I wanted to hate it more just so I could drop that great joke. But
I know.
You are unfortunately middling on it.
Yeah.
I will say specifically, Robin De Jesus kind of stole the movie for
me.
He's
really good, especially in sort of like the final act. He's he is excellent.
Yeah. I watched Mulatti, the Sinbad
movie.
Holy shit.
That's a good movie.
That is a wreck of a movie. As in emotional wreck, sorry. Not like it's a bad movie.
Not bad.
Yeah.
My God. It's horrible. Anyway, I watched Taste of Cherry, another Kiarostami. Pretty good. Probably my least favorite of his, but like still a 5 out of 5. So I don't know what to say there. I watched The Great White Silence, which was one of the most like visually blown away I've been by a movie recently. Mm-hmm. It's do you guys know about this movie?
Just from you talking about it.
It's a documentary. Basically, it's Pontine's old films from the Scott expedition to the South Pole. And he personally like colorized it himself and stuff. And it looks gorgeous. Oh, my God. But there is one part where they suddenly are like, and meet the mascot of the team, N-word. And it's just a black cat. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right, movie just dropped for 1 second.
It's rough out there.
I watched Eve's Bayou, real good movie. How is Journey Smollett acting in that movie? Like, this is the weird thing. It's almost too good of a performance. Yeah. Like, it doesn't even feel like a kid anymore.
It's an amazing child performance. Yeah, it really, it's really amazing. It's almost hard to describe. It's one of the most amazing child performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, could be the best. I could see a very strong argument. I watched the Turkish movie Mustang.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
No.
This is really up your alley, Jim.
No, I know. It's like Virgin Suicides-y. And
yeah, it's been on my list. I couldn't get that out of my head. I was like, this is kind of a poor comparison, but...
No, that was the comparison when it came out. And I meant to see it like back in 2015 or whatever that was. And I just never...
It's leaving Criterion in 20 days. Oh, so get on it.
Put it on the list.
Because it's not streaming anywhere else. You got to...
And it was like
I thought it used to be like rentable on iTunes.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I don't check rentable.
Oh well, I do.
So it might still be rentable, but I want Jana to watch it as soon as possible. So
it's on the
I'm
list.
I'm gonna tell her.
Yeah, it's on the list. But yeah, I've
should
been.
Should I tell you if it is or is not, so that you feel compelled? You feel the time crunch of Criterion?
No, I always just check on Letterboxd. Okay.
It is
Watch app anyway. Yeah, rentable.
Yeah, it is rentable on iTunes too. If you don't get to it by the end of the month.
Yeah.
Just get to it by the end of the month.
I'll get to it. Oh, it says it's also on Canopy. I may have access to it there as well. All right.
I did learn recently that Canopy, my local library is not on Canopy.
Yeah. LA Public Library is on Canopy. I only get a certain number of credits. It's not unlimited, but it's like pretty high.
Yeah,
I think
that's the way Canopy always is. It's 10 a month.
It's like 10 a month, yeah. So, but yeah, I do have Canopy, which is pretty neat.
I need to write a letter to my library chain. Yeah. Be like, come on. I watched Encanto, which, have you guys seen Encanto?
Not yet. I might watch it later today.
So I've seen, Evie really likes it. So I've seen the first 15 minutes of it probably 7 times.
Okay. Is that as much as she watches? Like, does she just want to watch the first 15 minutes and then she gets bored?
A lot of times.
The first 15 minutes are like, we're going to throw you in. We're going to have colors, have some fun. We're going to have
Nelly
a lot of exposition.
Frozen 2, like, no idea what happens in Frozen 2 after, like, the first half hour. So I've seen
almost all
of Encanto.
That movie's a slog in the back half, so. Frozen 2.
I saw, like, the denouement, but I didn't see the climax, so I don't know exactly how they get to the very end.
Gotcha.
So I probably have, like, 15 minutes towards the back.
Okay.
Last act that I have some holes in. But I get the gist of, like, most of the movie. It's fine.
Yeah, it was all right. I was kind of disappointed, honestly. I felt like it could have been, like, they could have done more.
Yeah.
I loved the theme of the movie, though. I thought it was a really good theme, and the music was excellent. Mm-hmm. Only one song where Lin-Manuel Miranda did his, like, little...
Does he sing in it?
No, okay. But you know how he, like, you know,
the patter.
Threat of the nation, the station.
I like that stuff, unfortunately, for me. That's my uncool opinion. Like, I love, yeah. Like, I listen.
There's only
I,
so much I can take of
child-free it. Child-free adult listen to You're Welcome from Moana all the time, and that is like the most Lin-Manuel. That's a great song. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna watch Encanto. It looks cute enough.
Well, it's gonna be nominated for an Oscar. So.
Exactly. So I need to get on
sooner or
later. Watch that and Mitchell's versus the Machines. I gotta start doing my anime.
Mitchell's versus the Machines is a hoot. Okay. Like that
looks fun.
Really yeah. Fun movie. Yeah.
On that did you see the? I think it was the person that directed Mitchell's versus the Machines got on Letterboxd and they did a whole profile of her and like her account.
Yeah, they even did like a video of because the girl's like.
I was gonna say, did they do a fake starting little thing about the character, the girl going to film school?
Yeah, so the movie's about like the trip that her family takes before she goes. She starts like her freshman year at film school, and then the machine uprising happens.
As it does.
Yeah, but they like maybe a month or so ago they did like a 2-minute long video that was on Twitter and whatever.
Oh,
Of her, and it's like she stopped by the Criterion Aww. Offices, but they wouldn't let her in, so she had to do something else. It was pretty funny.
I haven't seen them. Apparently, there's like some FYC ads over on Sunset around town that are like sort of like her that are like she made them the character on the billboards and stuff. So they're really leaning into the sort of meta filmness of it.
I actually bought Evie the FYC, I got it on eBay, the FYC package that they were sending out to whoever critics. And it's got like a sticker book, the script, which she like opened it and she's like, where are all the pictures? I'm like, well, there's a whole other book that's just, so there's an art book that's like just the pictures, which is pretty cool.
Remember being that age where you opened up a book and you're like, where's the pictures? Yeah. What am I looking at here? What are these words?
I did kind of do it with this book, to be fair, like just recently.
Moby Dick.
I was told there was editions of pictures. I was told there was editions of Moby, like pictures of Moby Dick.
There are, with pictures of whales,
But Dylan, I want pictures of whales and boats.
So, Dylan, you've seen Mitchell's versus the Machines?
No, that's on my
list. Oh, okay. So, there's a like a thing that the dad gives her when she's like a small child. It's like a wooden moose that he'd carved, and that's the other thing that they sent. So she has that on like her dresser now.
That's cute.
That's really nice. Talking about meta movies, watched Matrix Resurrections. Yeah.
We've all seen that now.
Can I hold on. We got to talk about Matrix Resurrections real quick.
Yes, we do.
This is going to be spoilers.
I have
spoilers
lots
for
of thoughts.
Do we want to save that for the end so that if people don't want to hear spoilers for Matrix
Resurrections? Yeah, let's do that at the end.
I just want to bring up the thing that I had said to you after you watched it, the analogy that I had.
Yeah.
And I'll just quickly throw my opinion. Fucking amazing movie.
It's good.
And I'm not much of a Matrix person. That movie had me nervous in the first 20 minutes and then just was like, what if we made a great movie?
It's a hoot.
It's real good. I watched About Ellie, the Farhadi movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the most stomach-churning things I think I've ever watched.
Yeah. Sounds like
it. It's Farhadi. It's all his movies. I need to get you to watch a Farhadi, Jana.
I've seen The Salesman.
You've seen The Salesman.
Very upset because of that. I think The Salesman was 2017. I think that was the year I did every Oscar movie. And so I saw it in theater, the same theater that's playing A Hero right now. And if I were going to theaters, I would have gone to see it this weekend.
Oh, my God.
But I saw The Salesman. And that have either of you guys seen that movie?
I haven't. No.
I want to see it before I watch The Hero. That's my plan.
It's upsetting. It has some really upsetting content in it. And there's something in particular that happens in it that literally changed the way I conduct my life. Like something happened.
We got to talk about this.
Yeah, where I was like, okay, I used to do that thing. I'm not going to do that thing anymore because the consequences are so upsetting in that movie. Good movie, but I need to watch the rest
of
them.
I'm so curious.
Yeah.
About Ellie, like, felt like a horror movie. Do you guys know what this movie's about?
No.
I don't. I knew it's supposed to be really like effed up, but.
Well, it's just people yelling at each other. Like, there's nothing like really upsetting that physically happens in it. But it's like these people go on a vacation to this house. So it feels like one of those like haunted house sort of movies where it's like these group of people go to a house and like basically one of the people that goes there is named Ellie, who's like a school teacher that's about. I don't know how much I should say. She's not supposed to be there. Like, you obviously could tell, like, she went there secretively. And at one point, one of the kids of the few families that are there gets lost in the water. Mm-hmm. And they get him out. And then they're like, where's Ellie? And then they cannot find Ellie.
Mm. Ellie, that's the same actress from The Salesman. The girl who plays...
Wait, which one?
The one who plays Ellie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not are you? Is it because Ellie's not top build?
No. She's the one who's credited as Ellie on Wikipedia.
Okay, gotcha.
She's like third build.
Because like the main one on the poster and the main one that's right. credited, I was like, oh, that's gonna be Ellie. And then I started watching the movie. And I was like, wait. No, that's not Ellie.
The girl who actually plays Ellie is the one who goes on to be the main character in The Salesman.
Nice.
But
I'm just glad to watch The Salesman.
Yeah, I think I loved that movie, and I feel like the critical response was a little bit middling, and so I was like, well, maybe it's just because I haven't seen other movies. So to me, I'm like, holy crap.
Everyone was just kind of like, good movie, but watch A Separation or go watch About Ellie.
Yeah, which I haven't seen those, so maybe those will really blow my mind. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. All right, and then I'm at last movie I watched, which was Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy, which is the best movie of the year. I don't care how good Drive My Car is. It's going to be the best.
It's a very good movie. I think it's really fantastic. Like I said, it's like in my top 20. I also just think for me, like an anthology movie is just always harder for me to click with as like best when I'm comparing it to non.
I think you really have to wrap a good theme around all three or four stories. They really do.
Yeah. No, it's cohesive. It holds together really, really well. But I think that's just like always a little bit of a. The virtual cinema link is still playing. But it's I agree. It's really, really fantastic, and it's up there for me. And I definitely like in some categories some of the performances and stuff. I think are top notch. It's not uncommon. I've seen people say that they like it better than Drive My Car. They think it's better than Drive My Car. It's not for me, but
Car is really good. I'm just like, can't imagine it right now.
Yeah, it's different. It's doing something very different for sure. But yeah, a couple of great movies.
All right, that's me.
Okay. So I knew that The Salesman had beaten out for a best foreign language film something that was like pretty notable and that was a critical darling. It was Tony Erdmann.
Yeah.
That's the movie that it beat out.
Yeah.
Which,
oh, wow.
Tony Erdmann's
I haven't seen The Salesman.
Tony Erdmann's so good.
Tony Erdmann's pretty great.
Yeah, that was a strong crop that year.
What else was nominated?
Landmine, A Man Called Ova, and Tana?
Okay, so I didn't really see it. So this is 2016. So I saw Landmine and Salesman and Tony Erdmann, and those are all good. I did not see the other two.
Okay. What did I see? So I watched All Light Everywhere, which was the new Theo Anthony documentary. It's interesting. It's a little like scatterbrained, I think, but it's about sort of the surveillance state and police body cameras and stuff like that. One of my friends got me a movie called Love Letter from Shunji Iwai, which is he's the guy who directed All About Lily Choo Choo, which is like his more famous film. But it's about this woman who
This sounds so good.
Yeah, this woman is engaged to this guy, and he's been dead for like a couple years when the movie starts, and she writes a letter to him. She like finds his address in an old yearbook and writes a letter to him and then gets a response back. But it's not anything mystical. It's that there was another person. There was like a girl who was in the same class who had the exact same name. So she has a correspondence with this girl who had the same name as her dead fiance. It's a really good movie. I watched Old, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, which is a hoot.
Yeah.
It's been so long since we've talked. Yeah, Old.
Yeah.
Great movie.
How did you like Old?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a hoot. Okay. It was really fun. Yeah.
It was an awesome movie.
I watched Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions prior to watching Resurrections. Nelly had never seen Raiders before, so we watched Raiders.
Crazy.
Lost Ark?
Yeah. I don't know.
She had never seen Raiders.
As soon as she, like, I forget how it came up, and she's like, oh, I've never seen that. And I was like, well, that's what we're watching tonight then. Yes,
that's so good.
It's a very good movie. We saw West Side Story, and then like a week later, we saw it again.
Yeah.
Which is the first.
Is there any reason that you felt like seeing it again?
Because it rules. Yeah. It was the first movie. I'm pretty sure it's the first movie I've seen multiple times in theaters since The Dark Knight.
Wow. I think for me, so I also saw it twice in theaters since last time we talked, despite the slander on the last podcast that I did hear about how I don't like West Side Story, even though the reason I was not available to record last time you guys talked about The Matrix, I think, is because I was actually at my second screening of West Side Story. So, but yeah, I think it's the first one I've seen twice in theaters, maybe since Mad Max Fury Road. I saw that twice in theaters, but...
That's a good one to see twice.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Good movie. Agree.
Yeah. We both really, really loved it. I watched the Sister Street Fighter trilogy, which is pretty fun series of movies.
I saw you posting about that, and I did not know what on earth you were talking about.
Yeah, the last one was kind of a dud. The first one is fun, and the second one, like, really, really.
The last one's the one where someone gets their arm cut off, and then you can see their arm tucked inside their jacket.
That's the second one. That's the one that rules.
Oh, okay. That's the good one. All right.
Of course. Yeah. Is it called Hanging by a Thread?
Yeah, yeah. It was. That's a really fun movie. It's pretty fucked up. I watched Legend, the Ridley Scott, Tom Cruise
movie, Legend? Wow, yeah. I've never seen that.
It's not a great movie, but it looks incredible.
That movie looks dope.
It looks so cool.
I'm so in from how it looks. It's got Mia Sara in it, which that's a person that should have like acted in everything.
Yeah, I think. And Tim Curry is the devil. He's under a lot of stuff, but like,
as he always is.
What else? I saw Nightmare Alley, which is pretty good. The Del Toro one. I like the original. Yeah, I like the original one better, but you know, there's good performances in it. What else? I watched. I'm gonna skip through some of this shit. Like, I saw Don't Look Up, which sucked. Belfast, which is fine. Passing, which I guess take the reins on that one since I didn't like it enough, apparently.
you only thought it was good, not great. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Licorice Pizza, arguably the best movie of the year. Right now it's between that or West Side Story for me. Just like both of those movies left me completely swooning. What else? French Dispatch, which I liked. Spencer, Memoria, which is bringing it back to Tilda Swinton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how this became Tilda Talk. Tilda Swinton. Yeah, was
The Tilda show. Yeah. We need to talk about Tilda.
We need to talk about Tilda.
I want to talk about Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, the history of folklore, which is like a 3-hour-long documentary just about folklore, and it's part of the Big Severin folklore collection. It's like the first disc, and somebody made a Letterboxd list of all the movies that are mentioned, like even just get a passing mention in the movie, and I think it's like 200 some, and I'd seen like 15 of them, I think.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Could you send that list over?
Yeah, I'll track it down on Letterboxd and send it to you. What else? Oh, Lost Daughter, which Olivia Colman is just...
Whew.
Man, she's good.
What a performance.
That's a tough sit, but I liked it. Yeah, how did you like it? I know you...
Yeah, so that's like the last movie. Let's look at the last movie I watched before we recorded. I watched it late-ish last night. I liked it a lot. I think in some ways I was maybe like overprepared for how tough a sit it was going to be. You know what I mean? Like,
people talk about
how harrowing it is that I kind of was waiting for even more. It's more just like a creeping sense of just like discomfort.
Yeah, because I was really prepared for something not just sad and moving, but for something like catastrophically.
Right, same. And it's not terrible. It's just sort of existential dread.
Yeah. And I wonder if I would like it better.
Yeah, I can't.
On a rewatch without that unsettling. It's kind of like, I don't want to spoil Minari, but like part of what kept me a little bit at arm's length is that the entire movie, I thought the kid was going to die.
Right.
So I was like on edge waiting for the kid to die. And then like the kid's fine. So I wonder if
similar vibe. And this isn't really a spoiler because there's like a lot of kids running around in Lost Daughter, but like multiple times Matt kept being like, I thought that kid was going to die. I thought that kid was going to die. Like, I thought that kid was dead.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, so if you're like primed for that, and I can't wait, Dylan, after you watch it, maybe when we do our year in review podcast, because I want to talk about the ending of that movie.
Sure.
Because it has an interesting ending. So, yeah.
What else did you watch, Shannon?
Oh, me? Okay. All right.
Oh, should we talk more about Memoria since you also watched that?
Yeah, we can talk a little about Memoria, that a film that we watched through Methods.
No, I watched it illegally as Neon. I bought a plane ticket to New York and or LA.
Chicago. It's not. It is decidedly not in Los Angeles. Let me tell you. Yes.
Yeah, I saw it.
Despite
totally
COVID, Nick and I got on airplanes and went to New York and Chicago respectively, and watched Memoria, the way Neon intended. I don't even know how to talk about Memoria, and maybe
it's really at
the end of the year. We were talking about this earlier, but after watching it, literally just immediately messaged Nick and was like, what happened? Explain this movie to me. I don't know what I just watched.
And I think I just said impossible.
Yeah, can't do. Sorry. No help. It is. I felt a little bit vindicated when I saw multiple Letterboxd reviews from people who saying that, like, maybe it's on purpose. And then Nick, I think maybe you said something kind of similar too, but like, this movie like kind of feels like it's trying to lull you to sleep on purpose. Like, it has been a long time since I felt so close to falling asleep during a movie. And there were a couple like long blinks where I'm like, was I asleep? Yeah. Did I miss something? Nothing's changed. But that doesn't mean necessarily that I wasn't asleep for 5 minutes, because she may have been sitting silently in this room for 5 minutes and I might have just.
Yeah. I think it was, I read a bunch of reviews on this just to try to like, get different insights. And I think it was Amy Tobin's review said that it's like more so than almost any other movie, something that like, you know, we say that we see a movie, but this is a movie where it's like you heard the movie, because there's like a rumbling drone.
Speaking
throughout
of tough
the entire
sits,
movie.
Like literally, I by the end I was like, is this almost over? I don't want to listen to this anymore. Well, and just the rumble, like just the rumble that it plays throughout the entire movie. But yes, there's a scene in the beginning where like a car alarm starts going off, and then it triggers a bunch of other car alarms going off. So then, of course, car alarms started going off in my neighborhood. And I just felt like I was going up. Like, there were parts of the movie that made me feel insane, because also I live in a very old apartment building with very loud neighbors. So like, I could hear the entire movie. I could hear the people upstairs just like walking around and slamming doors. I could hear cars zooming by, and this is with all my windows and everything shut. I could hear car alarms going off, and so I really felt like I was going to go insane. It was a real immersive sensory experience where I was like, I can't do this.
And that's really like what his movies are, is it's more just like immersive into a world that sort of doesn't make sense, and you just kind of have to like live in it and accept that, rather than try to like piece together what everything really like means.
And it is beautiful. I saw National Society of Film Critics, I think, had it as like a runner-up for cinematography, like, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And the sound design is really amazing. There's maybe like four or five actual scenes in the movie where people like talk to each other or talk about things or where things progress. It was so funny because we watched it, had dinner, then watched The Lost Daughter. And like 5 minutes into Lost Daughter, Matt's like, there's already been more dialogue in this movie than in the whole last movie. It's like, yeah, pretty much. But there are some of those scenes are amazing. Like, you know, and so I really sort of would perk up. There'd be like an interesting scene of people interacting with one another. And then you'd get like 20 more minutes of Tilda Swinton just sort of silently walking around.
Walking around looking at a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at nature. Yeah, it was
Sounds so good.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Did you figure out which part was when I messaged you guys and I was like, holy fuck.
Oh, I did. Yes.
Yeah. It's the thing towards the end when you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah. And then when you're like, and then there's like, you know, 10 minutes left or whatever. And there are, like, because that's happened, and Matt was like, I'm sorry, what? And I was like, I think there's like 10 minutes left in this movie. Yeah, it's a weird one.
Okay, I cannot wait.
I think you'll love it. It is like respectfully not for me, but like in a way that I admire. Like, I'm glad I saw it, but like, it is just not for me, but that is okay. And I'm really glad I saw it. And the ending's wild, and that's cool.
Yeah,
Nick, I'm curious how close it is to the Licorice Pizza West Side Story leading pack.
Right now, it's sort of like mid top 10-ish for me. I haven't like fully arranged them, but it's not going to be above them. But it seems like it's solidly in my top 10 right now.
Okay.
I can't remember where I through it. I mean, like, I gave it like a very respectful.
I saw you gave it 4 stars.
I gave it a very respectful 4 stars. Like,
You appreciate what it's
doing. I really appreciate what it was doing, but it was so challenging. I'm like,
his movies are all like,
there's some movies. I have it at 30 on my list. I have it right in the middle of the pack, but like, that's how strong this year is. Like, I was telling
this year's insane.
To me, this is one of the strongest movie years I've had, maybe since 2017, 2016, 2017. Like, I
mean, it's mainly because all the movies are from 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, I have like fully 6 movies at 5 stars right now, which is I usually have 1 or 2, and I have 6 movies from 2021.
What are the 6 right now?
I mean, spoiler for the end of the year, but it's West Side.
You have a lot more movies to see.
West Side Story, Bergman Island, Power of the Dog, Petite Maman, Licorice Pizza, and Drive My Car.
Gotcha.
So, and then I have 10 more that are 4.5 stars, or like 14 more. So I'm just like.
And we know ratings can change.
My ratings are not, because Bergman Island I had 4.5 when I first watched it, and then I couldn't stop thinking about it for like 2 months, and so I bumped it to a 5.
Sure. I didn't know people were allowed to do that.
They are.
All my ratings,
you know what?
All my ratings have been like set in stone.
You are allowed to do whatever you want. Be free.
There's some like monk on the top of a mountain that like
is chiseling it
in
stone,
and then if Nick changes the rating,
wait,
he's like,
"How do you?
I can't change.
You can
this.
Change your stars. You can change your list order. You can change whatever you want."
Oh my god!
So
that's too many options.
All right, let me just run through because I'm gonna have to just edit a lot, and I'm not mentioning like any of the like Christmas movies or whatever the hell I watched. Okay. Since last we spoke, I watched Flea, the animated documentary foreign language film. Really, really pretty fantastic. I liked that quite a bit. I watched Jockey, tiny little independent movie starring Clifton Collins Jr. About horse racing and jockeys, and it's like kind of like a small family drama.
Not a top horse.
Heard of this movie?
It really checks.
He looks like he was good, or he was getting good reviews.
He's really fantastic in it, and he's one of those like longtime character actors who finally gets to like be the star of a movie. It reminded me a lot of another indie spirit movie last year that I liked called Bull that starred Rob Morgan that was about a bull rider. This one's about a jockey. It really, so I gave it like 3 stars. I think his performance is really fantastic. It is so, and I feel so mean saying this about a tiny movie, like it, because it's like nominated, I think, for like maybe like the Cassavetes Award at Indie Spirit. So like we're talking like really tiny budget.
Tiny, yeah.
But like it's a really sort of like paint by numbers indie film in a lot of ways. Like the entire thing is shot at Magic Hour. It looks phenomenal, but literally every scene is at sunrise or sunset Magic Hour. Has like these sort of like this like score that's like sort of these like strings and everything that are almost explosions in the sky-esque. And again, all things I like, but just felt so like checklist indie movie that it kind of kept me at arm's length. But his performance is really fantastic, and I'm like really just happy for him that he got to make this movie. Saw West Side Story twice. Yeah. Good movie, A+, no notes. Liked it even better the second time. I was just so nervous watching it the first time that like, because I care about that movie so much that like, and I still was blown away by it, but I could not like relax and enjoy it. So the second viewing did a lot of that for me.
So, I was hooked like pretty much from the start. Like he starts with the overhead.
Yeah.
Like the overhead pan. And I'm like, all right, this is pretty good. And then just like the dance number of them all snapping out. And
so good.
It's good.
Yeah. I saw Benedetta, the Paul Verhoeven movie, Benedetta.
I need to see
it. It's real good. I liked that way more than I thought I was going to. It's really, really fun and interesting. I saw The Harder They Fall, which I feel like, I guess we haven't talked about that on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that was one I skipped.
Yeah,
over.
Which I liked more than you. I still don't think it's like, you know, A+ or anything. But and I saw that twice because I watched it by myself on my birthday. And then I watched it with my dad over Christmas because I knew my dad would like it. It's good. Idris Elba, good actor. Good.
He's great.
I think Jonathan Majors is good in it too. I think they're all pretty good. Maybe Regina King. I'm not quite sure what she's doing, but
I felt the same way.
Right. I'm like, not sure what
I think. She's a great actress. Yes. I don't know what she's really doing.
It's a weird character, and she like, this is a weird thing to say, but she doesn't get as much to do as Zazie Beetz, and like I kind of wish. So like their showdown. I don't know. But I generally liked it quite a bit. The music's really good. being the Ricardos, whatever. not worth getting into. Wheel of Fortune Fantasy, we talked about. Really, really fantastic movie. Ryusuke Hamaguchi. Do recommend anthology film. Pretty fantastic. I watched all of the Matrix movies leading into Matrix Resurrections because I hadn't seen the first one start to finish in God knows how long, and I hadn't seen the sequel since the theaters. So I watched those going into Resurrections. Resurrections, very good. I liked it quite a bit as well. We are pro Resurrections here.
Hell yeah.
One old movie.
It's the best Matrix
movie. I've pretty much just been calling out.
Second best.
Yeah, second best. I've mostly been calling out new watch or like 2021 movies, but one old movie that I did watch on New Year's Eve that I wanted to call out is the movie Metropolitan, the Whit Stillman movie.
Didn't you have that second on your list? Yeah, it
came in under the wire to be one of my favorite first time watches of 2021. I mean, it's an incredibly like me movie. Sure. It's so good. I loved it. I can't wait to watch. I have the Criterion box set of the sort of loose trilogy. So I'll get to Barcelona and Last Days of Disco soon, but Metropolitan ruled. And then now we're finally to the last week where I saw Red Rocket, which I liked quite a bit, unsurprisingly. I'm a real sucker for Sean Baker's movies. I went in with like kind of weirdly low expectations, thinking maybe this would be the one I didn't like. It's not Florida Project for me. It's not in contention for Best of the Year, but it is... very good. And the whole Simon Rex thing is no joke. Watched Passing, which, as Nick alluded to, I liked more than he did. And I do not think you didn't like it enough. I think you probably liked it the appropriate amount.
I liked it.
I just like really liked it in a way that I wasn't expecting to. So I might have just gone in again with really low expectations. Some of these, once we get to this time of year, it's really a mix of like, it's a real expectations game because it's kind of a mix of things I could have watched a long time ago, but I put off and my expectations are low, and then I catch up with them and I'm like, oh, this is good. Or it might be things I've built up too much in my mind because I haven't got to see them until now. And so then my expectations are out of whack that way. But yeah, Passing, really good. And then the only, we already talked about Memoria and Lost Daughter. So then I will just also mention Petite Maman, which completely blew me away. There is a line towards the end of that movie that I haven't, like, that literally took my breath away, like, made me feel like I couldn't breathe, like, haven't stopped thinking about it. And it's just, like, one little line, and, like, it's almost, like, too special to talk about that movie. We'll talk about it more when we talk about our end of the years, but, like, I also similarly was like, I don't know, it's a movie about a couple of kids, I'm probably gonna be bored, whatever. And it just absolutely destroyed me.
It seems magical.
It is a very, very, very special movie. Especially if you are like the only child daughter of a mother. And then it's got, there's a lot going on in that movie. So, when I saw it, it's a film independent screener, but when it is actually available to people, I hope a lot of people see it because it's very, very good. So yeah. Well, we spent about an hour on Lady Eve and an hour on other stuff, but I think that gets us to the end of, our topics for this week, unless there was anything else anyone wanted to mention before we wrap up.
Matrix Resurrection spoiler talk.
Oh yes, Matrix Resurrection. Yeah.
Oh, just the one thing I have. Oh,
yeah,
about
spoiler,
that.
spoiler. Matrix Resurrections. Okay, go ahead.
Big spoiler.
So Dylan, do you remember in Endgame when Captain America like grabs whatever the hammer is called?
Yes. Thor's hammer. It's Thor's called hammer.
And okay.
And then I was like, "What?"
I'm gonna be honest. I thought that was right, but I didn't want to say it and be wrong. I was too afraid. So he like grabs Mjolnir, and everyone in the audience, like, did you see it in theaters? And like everyone in the crowd, like,
yeah.
I was like, "What?" I don't get it. It's a hammer. Like, this pretend guy grabbed a pretend hammer. I don't know.
None of this is real, as we know.
This has any emotional resonance. However, when Trinity starts flying, I was fucking hooting and hollering.
The chills down my back.
I finally understood.
Nick abandons his none of this is real, it's all made up bullshit about franchise movies, but only for Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah. So anyways, that's all. That was my Captain America grabs Mjolnir as
it's no
Trinity flying. I was just yes.
And he actually the movie is not subtle, which is okay. It does not have to be. That's like not its deal. But like Neo actually says, like, it's my turn to believe in her, right? Like he basically, you know, they're not subtle about what we're doing here. But yeah, no, I mean, the whole reason Matrix Resurrections works is because you care about Trinity and Neo and that. And that's what you really care about. Good movie. Do you have any Matrix thoughts you wanted to add, Dylan?
I'm good.
You ready for us to wrap up?
Sure.
All right. Well, for anyone who is still here, thanks so much for joining us this week. Join us next week when we will be discussing another movie that I did not write
down. Last Year at Marienbad.
Last Year at Marienbad. Is that another boat
Who's
movie?
Who's got that?
You do.
Okay, I thought so.
Oh, thank God.
Is that a weird? Is that going to be a weird one to talk about?
It's about as challenging as Memoria. Not as slow, but in terms of like things that make sense.
Okay.
Maybe less so.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. I will mentally prepare myself for that one. Good to know. How long are we talking here? Last Year at Marienbad.
92 minutes, I think.
Oh, okay. I mean, even
95 minutes.
Sweet. All right. So yes, join us next week or next time we convene to talk about Last Year at Marienbad, which I did not do the due diligence to find out where it is watchable. I presume it's like rentable and stuff.
It's on Canopy.
Oh, okay, great. Our good friends over at Canopy. Sounds good. I will probably check it out there. But meanwhile, you can follow us on both Twitter and Letterboxd at Great Movies Pod. Thank you, as always, to our friend Scott Brady for our artwork. You can follow him on Twitter at SBradyArtist. And that's it for this week. So Roger out.
Roger out.
You okay?
And when I go to the movies, I am that person on the screen. I am having vicariously an experience that happened to someone else. And that makes me a better person. That to see good films and to see important films is one of the most profoundly civilized experiences that we can have as people.